like to welcome everyone to Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio. Frank McKay here with the author of The Inside Secrets of Sesame Street and two other wonderful books. More to come. Dr. Lucille Burbank is the subject of a documentary and a part two of that documentary soon coming up, and a series of radio shows here talking about one of our favorite things in life, and it's children, and certainly children's television and the education that comes along with children's television, namely Sesame Street. And so much on the groundbreaking, revolutionary show comes to us just over the airwaves, and we just kind of take it for granted, but certainly want to make the point that this lady knows the inside secrets of Sesame Street. Dr. Lucille Burbank, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Again, it's so nice to be with you again and the audience.
Well, as we broke last time, and I'm sure if people hadn't heard the previous shows that we've done, please, we encourage everyone to binge listen. But as we ended off last time, you were talking about testing. You used the term testing, and basically what, you know, I guess test marketing is what many people would know that as. They would come up with ideas, and they'd come up with you know, things and stories on the storyboard, and then they test them. When you say they test them, where do they test them, and how do they test them?
Yeah, that's a great question. We would go out to into the field, and we would bring video equipment and everything we needed, and hook it up, and either it was Head Start or a school or preschool, any place that had these children, 3 to 5 and sometimes 6 years old. But at any rate, we weren't really worried about the 6 years old, but we were worried about 3 to 5 years of age. The target, or the bullseye of the target, was about the 4, 4.5-year-old child. So we would set up the equipment, and depending on what we were doing, let's say we're doing fire safety study, and we're learning that the children, first of all, we need to learn what information do the children already know. What's that baseline? What can we count on them knowing? And then we would also find out what they didn't know. And we'd show them different segments. We'd ask them questions about it. At this point, I introduced a new research paradigm. Instead of doing a quantitative number crunching type of research, since this was an interview technique, using all sorts of little props and toys to get the children talking and so forth, I instituted a qualitative research paradigm, which was very important for this kind of research. And it took off really greatly, especially in shows where we are so concerned about how do we show fire safety without alarming, you know, without showing a fire on the screen, without anything being, you know, out of, not appropriate. You know, if they see a fire on the screen, that's going to make them scared and so forth. So what we did is we instituted that, and we would show different segments. And one of the things we found out by showing these, by our testing, is that the children did not understand that when a fireman suited up, got in his fire gear, and had his mask on and everything else, they would tend to, this was a great finding, the preschoolers would tend to run from him because he looked like Darth Vader. All suited
mean,
up.
You look like a villain.
Yeah, yeah. So what we did, and then this was also with community outreach, because they were doing fire safety in the community, because unfortunately there are a lot of fires occurring in these low socioeconomic places and the children were at risk. So what we did is we did segments showing the, and this again now is a good separation from reality and fantasy. We did segments showing the firefighter that he's a person, and then showing what he puts on and explaining everything, and then so that the children would know that this is the person they should go to if he comes into the house, instead of running from him under the bed where they're susceptible to smoke.
Wow. Yeah. You don't even think of anything like that. I mean, it's just amazing. Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio is in progress. Frank McKay here with the good doctor talking about wonderful things such as The Inside Secrets of Sesame Street, which you could purchase. Please get this book and read more in detail. You can't get it all just from radio. You got to get the book also, and two other wonderful books. Going back to Joan Cooney, what's the best way to sum up what she is about? I mean, go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, it was delightful. Joan Cooney was I knew she was a fine person, but it was a delightful surprise because she was so generous like everybody else. And what happened is I wrote her a letter and I explained to her my dissertation, what I was doing. And I told her, I happened to list in the letter all the people I had interviewed. At that point, I had interviewed Fred Rogers and Bob of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Bob Keeshan and all that staff of Captain Kangaroo. And I had also interviewed all of Mr. Rogers. And then I listed everybody on Sesame Street that I had interviewed so far. And I asked her for an interview. Well, evidently, when I came in, she consented. And when I came into her office, she was so impressed with the people that I had interviewed. In other words, she is such a people person, and Sesame Street is based on people. In other words, they incorporate all sorts, their main resource for Sesame Street is people. In fact, in my study, I said, you know, when you study Sesame Street, you can almost say in television that the resource of people is equally as important as the resource of money. And that was a statement that I had to base a lot of evidence on. And I did do that, but it was a conclusion I was coming to through everything. So I walk in and she goes, "Wow, look at all the people you interviewed." Yeah. She pulls out the letter and I said, "Oh, well, thank you so much for consenting to me." And she was just as personable and as lovely as she could be. And she answered all my questions. And when, you know, some of them were a little bit more factual than I would like, but the dissertation committee said I had to ask them anyway for a baseline. And so when she couldn't answer some of the factual questions, she said, "Well, you know, I can give you those answers or we can look them up later." But her concepts of how, you know, she looked at the curriculum and how formative research evaluation came about, and how she looked at the curriculum, and when she realized that we had, you know, Sesame Street would be on the air a couple of years, then she started adding the affective side. In other words, yes, they were very much strictly cognitive, but then they could add cultural things like music and of course dealing with death in the case of Will Lee, who played Mr. Hooper, the storekeeper. Yeah. His death.
Yeah, we spoke about that in our first in our first program together, and I think it's worth repeating now that we've done a couple of others. Yeah, Mr. Hooper died, the storekeeper. He was there for 10 years. The actor, I shouldn't say Mr. Hooper, the actor Will Lee, who played Mr. Hooper, passed away. And what was unique is normally they would, you know, tell children, oh, he went on vacation, or he moved. Mr. Hooper moved. They didn't. They took it as a learning opportunity, a learning situation. And refresh us on that.
Yeah, you know, it was a heroic decision. I was starting to work there, be a consultant there, and I was so pleased with their honesty. As Fred Rogers said to me in our interview, he said, "We need more honest adults, Lucille, for the children." And so I was jumping up and down, and not, of course, because he died. I mean, it was tragic, but he was so loved by everybody, all the actors on the show. And they thought of him as a wonderful grandfather, and he was indeed just a lovely person. And Carol Spinney, you know, one time he came in, Will Lee, and he wasn't feeling very good. And Carol Spinney would try and cheer him up and say, "Well, you know, Mr. Hooper, Mr. Looper, Mr. Cooper." And, you know, and he even went so far to go, "Mr. Oh, Spooper," or something like that, you know. And there was such a love there. Norman Stiles, the head writer of Sesame Street at that time, this is in the 80s, early 80s, he was fabulous as a writer, and he wrote the parting script, the script about the death of Mr. Hooper. And he did it this way. Everybody was around, and Big Bird comes in and shows a picture of everybody and of people like Bob McGrath and the actors or actresses, and he's showing this. And then he says, "Oh, and here's a picture of Mr. Hooper. Oh, I can't wait to give it to him." And the actors, you know, Maria and so forth, Bob and everybody look at him and say, "Well, don't you remember, Big Bird? Don't you remember he died?" And so Big Bird says, "Oh, well, I'll give it to him when he comes back." And then they had to really share with him, no, he's not coming back. He's not coming back. And so Big Bird bows his head and looks so forlorn. And the whole cast comes around Big Bird and hugs him. And they all, you know, end the segment with tears in their eyes. And they're all comforting Big Bird. And it was done on the first take, because it was so sincere, and everybody still misses Will Lee today.
Wow. And yeah, no, that's very heartfelt and thoughtful, yeah. The whole way they handled that. Frank McKay here, just a reminder, Dr. Lucille Burbank is the author of three wonderful books, more coming out, and the subject of a new documentary. The one we're focusing on as much as anything on these shows is The Inside Secrets of Sesame Street, and we encourage everyone to purchase that. Doc, just going back to some of the things you said there about Cooney, and you've mentioned some people, even the cameraman, and you know, and one of the writers, and again, these aren't people that you're gonna, you know, even Joan Cooney is not somebody that you're gonna run into on the street and know who it is. You will, right? I mean, people that have worked with her and know her will know that, but they sort of have a jazz famous thing to them, and what that was once explained to me is being jazz famous is everyone knows your work, but nobody knows exactly who you are. You could walk into a restaurant, you could walk into a You know, into a supermarket, and nobody's going to bother you. Maybe a guy like Gordon or Maria. I mean, who would be the most recognizable people on? Well, it'd be people, obviously, but, you know, people without costumes on. Who would be the most recognizable people on Sesame Street?
Oh, my gosh. Well, of course, the actors. But again, you know, when you're in New York City and everybody's moving up and down, although when you're seated and you're having lunch, then you would look around yourself and you would see these, my boss, Dr. Valeria Lovelace, who was assistant vice president of Sesame Street Research, she'd point people out. But of course, the actors would be the most recognizable. I mean, I can remember Joan Cooney saying to me, you know, I can't believe the people don't recognize Kevin Cash, who plays Elmo. You know, he's all there. But of course, Carol Spinney said to me one time, he's at the newsstand and he's picking up this beautiful Time magazine showing Big Bird's face. A big close-up of Big Bird and saying Sesame Street's gift to children. And this woman's remarking, and he happened to say, oh, no, I play Big Bird. And she goes, really? In fact, that's an interesting story because that issue of Time, which was put out in 1970, was really pivotal to Carol Spinney remaining on the job because, unfortunately, the puppeteers were not getting paid as much in the early days as the actors. And he took a look at that magazine and said, well, you know, we are really pivotal, very important to the show, very significant. And so I'm just going to keep persevering and until the pay scale comes along. And he was, and he did. And they Kermit Love, and this always makes me laugh. Kermit Love is the keeper of the bird, and, you know, Kermit the Frog, but there's really a man called Kermit Love.
Is that where they got the name? Is that where Henson got the name?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just coincidence.
Boy, that's a heck of a coincidence, boy.
It is. But I would have to look that up just to check.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a very good question, and I'm not completely sure.
Yeah, we'll look into that before we speak again. That's wonderful, yeah. But go ahead, Kermit Love. I sidetracked you.
Yeah, no, that's all right. So, Carol Spinney was really going to go up and see his boss, Jim Henson. And at that time, he was a stairway away from going to his boss and saying, hey, you know, I'm not sure I can continue this, even though I would like to, because I'm sleeping on this professor's couch. There's not enough money, and I've got provide for my family. So he's just going up, and Kermit Love calls him into his office and says, hey, here, come here. Let me show you how I'm making the bird into something more softer and a little bit not so corny or, you know, not so yokel or whatever. And even though, you know, and they had spoken and decided with Jim Henson that they would modify the bird a little bit, adding feathers. And then Spinney starts to talk to this man, and he says, you know, I don't know what to do. I was just going up to talk to my boss and everything. And evidently, during that conversation, and them showing him how he's adding more yellow feathers and making the bird more pleasing and so forth, Kermit Love convinced Spinney to just hang on. And then now it's been 45 years. I think he played, the last time I spoke with him, it was 40, 7 years he was still playing Big Bird, but he was training someone new, because this man is 77 years of age. And you know, he had started from the inception, and he had been there and everything, and no one else could play Big Bird. But after a while, you know, you kind of have to give someone else a chance. And he has been training, and I think the new trainee now is playing Big Bird.
Wow. Yeah, that's, you know, that's interesting. And you got to see what happens with the transitions. I mean, after all these years, you have people that retire or pass or go on to other things. Have you seen anybody? And again, we're talking all positive, and we're keeping things all positive. And actually, even before I ask that question, let's take a quick break. We're just about out of time. You've been listening to Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio. Frank McKay here signing off, but stay tuned. We'll be back real soon. Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio.